You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Revived Thoughts is a production of Revive Studios.
This is Troy and Elise, and you're listening to an episode of Revive Thoughts and Martyrs and Missionaries. Every episode of Revive Thoughts, we normally bring you a sermon from history, but we do stop and sometimes have these kind of conversations where we discuss different ideas. We usually call them revived conversations, and this one's a little bit special. For starters, I have my wife, the host of Martyrs and Missionaries, on the show. So, Elise, greet the audience. Let them know you're there.
I'm here. Hello, guys.
She's here, and not against her will, even though that's what she sounds like right now.
This was my idea, actually.
It was. So about 2 years ago, we were going back to the United States, and we did an episode called Behind the Slideshow. And the idea of that episode was just to kind of give you a little bit of a, here's behind the scenes of what it's like to be an overseas worker, Christian worker, doing stuff overseas. Like, what are some of the things that we can talk to you about that maybe necessarily your traveling missionary or your a friend who is working overseas, that the person who comes to your church and speaks once a year or whatever the case may be, the things that they maybe wish you knew, wish they could tell you, but they can't. And there's a lot of good reasons why they can't. Maybe you're a supporter. Maybe you're a potential supporter. Or maybe they don't feel like they can share these things with you. There's a little bit where you just have to be on your guard a lot when you go back to the States because you're always concerned that the people you're speaking with will be judging your ministry, judging your work. There's a lot of stuff like that. But we, Elise and I, are talking to you, the listener, right now. We don't feel that we have to hide any of that. You hear us all the time, me weekly and Elise pretty regularly on her show. And so this is our chance to kind of show and hopefully share some things about life overseas and what the workers that maybe you know or maybe you're just praying for and you don't know them very well, but some of the things that they're going through or thinking about or having to work through that they can't always share. And Elise, why don't you kind of pitch us the vision on this episode?
Yeah, so I had this idea actually doing some research on William Carey, which should come out in the next week or so. But I was looking at his wife, Dorothy. And if you happen to know anything about William Carey, you probably heard about Dorothy Carey and about her mental health struggles. She goes, she kind of loses her mind after a few years. And then after not even a few years, just a little while, and then is insane for the remaining 12 years of her life. And William Carey is kind of like one of the first guys to go out on the field. They were doing it for the first time, everything for the first time. And so her health problems and her crises and pretty much everybody's crises over there, kind of the first time it ever happened. So there's all these things they're learning for the first time. And I think we obviously have a lot of we can look back now, 200, 300 years later, and there's a lot we've learned, but there are still some things that do remain the same that now we have more resources for, but the struggles are still the same.
Yeah. So in this episode, we just kind of want to talk about family life. Like, what are the things, because this story led Elise to the idea of, you know, there are so many issues with families and relationships and raising children and getting things that you would not necessarily think that much about if you're living in the States or you're living in your home country, that when you're overseas, you not only have to think about how am I going to do these different things, But I also have to deal with the fact that I may also be getting judged or watched or scrutinized on how I go about these different things. And I think that for me, maybe the first place I kind of go to is schooling. And maybe that's because I am a teacher at a school, right? And that's, I work with a lot of students that their families are a part of this lifestyle. This is what their families have come overseas to do. And these different students are constantly having difficulties in different areas that maybe look very similar to the ones that students in your own neighborhood or your own church may have. For example, they have maybe a learning condition, something like dyslexia or something like that, a very normal thing that you kind of know how to deal with in the United States. But how do you deal with it when you're overseas? A good example is, you know, if you are on an island or you are one of two families on an island, you're raising your children there, you've learned the language, you've adopted the culture, this island and these people, this tribe or wherever you're at has embraced you and allowed you into their lives. You've made some real progress. Maybe you're translating the Bible or maybe you're just starting a church or whatever it is you're doing. And things have been going well for a while, but suddenly you realize that one of your children has been really struggling with their learning, with their education. And now you have this question, do you retreat from the ministry and the work that you've been a part of for years? Do you try to stay inside the same country and look for a school that can work with those kind of students? Do you return to the States? What do you do? And this is such a basic question. How many, you know, families listening right now? Yeah, we have somebody in our life who has a, you know, learning disability, something very simple that we've learned to deal with in our own home countries. But when you have to deal with it in the context overseas, it suddenly takes something that seems, and I think is very simple, not simple as in that's easy, but something that is very common and suddenly makes it much, much more tricky. Or another example too, an emotional problem too. There can be some times where, oh, this, if you don't, if you're, again, let's just take the tribe on the island. If you're in the island with the tribe and there aren't a lot of kids your child's age that are able to play with them and your children having to navigate and negotiate the difficulties of language and cultural barriers, and you may not be realizing that your child is actually really struggling with some basic social things that are actually pretty normal because your family is struggling to even have a context of what normal looks like. Or in reverse, it might not be some emotional disability. It might not be something as severe as all that, but it could just be purely the awkwardness of just how do we deal with our children who have been raising in a very different world. And then we're someday going to try to throw a lot of times, I from my experience, a lot of the families that we have seen will raise them overseas. They'll have a little bit of a foot in their home country, America, or some country in Europe tends to be the ones that we are familiar with. But then they, once they get a certain age, it's kind of like, okay, time to throw you back into the quote unquote home culture that you've been raised in. You haven't actually been raised in it. It's not really, truly your culture, and you aren't necessarily familiar with it. And that can become and also a really big deal and a really sink or swim for a lot of kids. And that's something that your every single missionary that has a child is thinking about. Like that is something on their mind.
Backing up just a little bit, too. When your kids start getting a little bit older, especially if you have girls and you're out on like, you know, more remote area, different cultures have a different opinion on what is marrying age. So sometimes your daughter might be getting inappropriate attentions or even marriage proposals. And so you have to think about that and go, I'm doing this ministry. I don't want to leave, but also I can't necessarily stay here. So what can we do? And that kind of leads us into two different options, or actually just three different options, I guess. You could entirely leave the field. Obviously, most people don't want to do that. There's also the option.
Although it does happen.
It does happen.
We have seen, I mean, it is a thing where there does come a time where people hit a certain age, their children hit a certain age, depending on where they're doing ministry, and how difficult it is, or just how it could be worn out, how much of a lack of support they felt, a myriad of reasons. That might be the time where they had to go, it's not that I don't love the work. It's not that I don't love what we got to do, but I have to tap out. It's not good for my family at this time.
Yeah, it's true. So the other two options would be moving to an area that has a school. Another option you could do is send them to boarding school, which, as we know, used to be very popular back in the day. It's still a thing. People do it. It's not as common now as it was. And even that has its own drawbacks, where a lot of families who've been very, very tight, very, very close, it's hard for them to only see their kids and only see their parents, you know, for holidays. And so that just creates some issues as well. And then also, as much as you would like there to be a Christian environment at the boarding school, you can't always guarantee what your child's being exposed to. So that it takes them kind of out of your, you know, under the safety of your wings a little bit. So that's obviously a stressor as a parent. So that kind of leads us to the third option, is where you have decided to move your entire family to a school like where we teach.
Now, it doesn't always mean, by the way, that the boarding schools are bad. There are lots of really good ones that are very Christian environments. And sometimes those can be really good, kind of almost, I don't want to say halfway, but like, you're okay, we know this kid is going to go off to college or go on and head out the door. Maybe this Christian school environment can be a good in-between step. So there are positives as well.
It's very true. I'm not negative on boarding schools. I know that there are people who swear by them and their kids are obviously very strong believers from them. I'm just pointing out some of the problems that there may be.
But I do think, like you said too, where if you were on, like, you know, we're always taking maybe the most extreme, but you're on an island, you're with your family, you guys spent all your time together, you did homeschooling together, you did everything together, and then suddenly you're at a certain age, you're completely now in this new environment, far away from your family. And it's just going to take a lot of adjusting. That's going to be pretty difficult. And for the parents, letting that go is also going to be hard. And then, like we said, there's the school we have. This is an international school setting where you're teaching students, and oftentimes you're teaching kids from these kind of families, but you're almost never just teaching kids from those families. You usually have local families and other groups of people and business families that are in town that need somewhere to send their kids as well. And they all kind of conglomerate usually into the same bubble. And this can be a very good situation. But I remember a couple summers ago when we met with somebody and they were like, they were kind of upset. They said that I couldn't believe that, a person that they knew that was overseas doing overseas work had put their kids in a school like that. And they were like, this family no longer lives in the tribe anymore. They had to move over so their kids could go to school. And I remember he was upset. I'm not in any way trying to criticize this gentleman. He's a good guy. But I remember thinking, you know, that's such a uniquely, like, you would only judge, I feel like, somebody overseas in this kind of work for doing that. If you're, you know, if you're pastor and your local, nobody's expecting a pastor of their local church to sacrifice their children's education. You know what I mean? I've never heard a pastor be like, hey, we're expecting you to take this salary. We're expecting you to, you know, do these kind of things, these kind of hours. Oh, and your children will have to just struggle. And that's just how it, like, we always expect, like, no, how can, especially these days, how can we support so that your children don't have that kind of reputation of pastor's kids? But overseas workers still sometimes can get that kind of criticism.
Actually, that brings up an interesting point, because I don't think it is as common now, but there are still some organizations out there that they kind of have the final say on where your kid goes to school, whether they stay with you or that they go to a boarding school. And that is a whole other dynamic, because that takes you out of the parenting equation altogether, really.
Yeah. And I mean, again, this is something that for a long time it was the norm. I think, thankfully, most groups have moved completely away from this. When you go overseas, you are sacrificing a whole lot. And maybe that is part of what you're sacrificing. You're trusting and putting your faith in God that he will preserve all of these things together. But I do got to say, I think that those were too far. I think those were mistakes in general to make. And I think that a lot of children really struggled to come out of those situations normal, partially because of that. And look, I don't want to make it sound like, oh, people who are overseas, it's just one long suffering for the Lord. The flip side of it is that there's so many good things.
We do still get ice cream.
Yeah, there are some places you do. But like, look, kids also get the benefit of seeing, honestly, close up faith in action in a way that I think a lot of other children maybe struggle. Even the pastor's kids will see whenever you've spent time working at a church or something like that, in some ways you kind of see under the hood. You see how stuff actually works, and that can almost be a repellent a little bit, because you realize just how many pieces are a difficulty. I think a lot of pastors' kids get exposed to that in a way that it makes it harder for them to see the good stuff that's going on. The kids overseas get some of that same flavor, but I think a little bit of a balance they get is because they're also seeing so often just some really amazing works of God, and they're usually seeing you know, people get their Bible for the first time in their language or something like that. Or maybe they're seeing that person that their family was praying for actually come and receive the Lord. Or they're at least by being exposed to a culture that's very probably against what they believe in, they're seeing the need for the world to hear the gospel. So I don't want to say it's, you know, I don't want to paint this one long, treacherous road of sacrifices and pain and suffering, because it's not what it is. There's a benefit. There are benefits that are truly intangible. It's just we're doing the behind the slideshow. We're trying to show you the stuff that not necessarily can be seen. You know, you also tend to miss all the major holidays. In fact, in our personal way, our world works, we will maybe never see snow again at the current pace. You know, there's just little things like that.
Yeah, even for Thanksgiving, you're not going to get a turkey, at least over where we are. You're going to eat roasted chicken, and you're going to eat roasted chicken for every holiday. You're not going to get that Easter ham.
And you're eating it without your family. It's not that you don't have friends. It's not that you don't have a community that you're a part of. In fact, I think sometimes we share stuff with our friends back home, and they go, wow, like the community over there really comes together. And it's true. It really does. Like you have to have a strong community to do what you do. But the flip side of that is your family is not going to be as a part of your life as you really, really want them. You want to see them on holidays. You want them to come for kids' birthdays. You want them to be a part of so many things. And when you're traveling like this, that doesn't get to happen. You get windows of time with them. And during those windows of time, you're traveling to other places and stuff as well. And so you just got to make it work. The Lord makes it work, but they are sacrifices. And I think they're sacrifices that a lot of people just, again, they don't see. And I guess, again, if I'm using the pastor illustration, I am not trying to, you know, overseas workers versus pastors.
You got to be careful, man.
And I'm not. But I am just trying to say, like, we would never expect pastors to, you know, never see their family on every holiday. That would be like, could you imagine writing that into a church? And by the way, you're never allowed to have Thanksgiving.
You're
with
at the nursing home.
Your family
24/7.
Cannot come. We don't want to see them, right? They would be crazy. You'd be like, no way. We want our pastor to have a good relationship with his family. But again, the overseas workers, it is just assumed in your lifestyle, it's not going to happen. And you're saying, hey, I sacrifice that to do what God has called me to do. Amen. But it's still a hardship.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
All right, next step here. I have this handy dandy little notebook. I think Troy glanced at it cursorily. I rely on it. It's my like brainwave. Anyway, so the next step that I have here is kind of the elderly, actually. Yeah. It's on a different tack.
This is a group you may not think about. We're trying to throw different thoughts at you, people you haven't considered. What are things that they're going through? If you're overseas in the community, it is very likely that you have people who have been serving overseas for a long time.
Very, very, very long time.
Some of them might, well, golly, we're making it sound like, but, I mean, we have some very amazing people in our community that we are just talking to them can sometimes be amazing. It's almost the stories and things that they have been through is overwhelming to hear them. It can be like listening to apostles or something speak on the one hand. True. But there is on the other side of it too, where, you know, what happens if an elderly person's spouse dies and they're out? What do they do? Do they go back, quote unquote, home to the country where their spouse didn't die? Do they stay overseas and decide to die in the same country where they feel like their loved one is? What happens if the elderly person starts to show signs maybe of Alzheimer's or something like that? You know, what do you do? Do you talk to, how would you talk to somebody? Do you try to get a hold of, what? There are these questions and things that like, oh, super, you know, if you're, even if you're in your local church community and that, you know, beloved elderly patron saint that, you know, you've been taking care of them for a long time. They start to show signs. Okay, maybe you talk to the family. Maybe it's time to get them into hospice or something like that. There's all these different...
Not hospiceness. It's hospice is when you're going to die.
Oh, not hospice. What's the one I'm thinking of?
I don't know.
The home care. I don't know. There's all these different things that you can do. Nursing homes, whatever it is.
Assisted living.
Assisted living. Thank you. The old assisters. But in overseas, there's not an assisted living like situation here. You are their assisted living. What do you do? You know, how do you handle that? And I'm sure for every community, it will end up being different. But it's just a question you have to ask. There's no assisted living, and their family is very likely, 5,000 miles away. You may not even know any members of their family. You may have never met a single child of that. They've got, you know, maybe many children. You have no idea because you know them as a partner in the community. You've never known them in that kind of a way. And so how would you get in contact? What do you do? And how do you ask for that contact? And how do you say, hey, there's so many questions that I would not be surprised if you had not thought of this, because it was something I had not thought of before coming out here. So there's one for you.
Mm-hmm. Also, okay, so going back to orgs and stuff, I don't know if anybody else does it, but I do know that, I'm pretty sure at least, it's Ethnos 360 that has a retirement community. I think it's in Florida, isn't it?
I believe so.
Sanford, maybe? Outside of Orlando? I'm not sure. I could be totally wrong. I know one of these organizations, maybe even Pioneer, has a retirement community, which sounds like the coolest place, honestly. Like, you have a bunch of retired missionaries that are all hanging out together. That sounds really cool. That's just a side note. That side note, that's not a plug for Ethnos or anything like that. I mean, if you want to join them, go ahead. But it wasn't a plug.
Well, gee, now it sounds like you're anti.
No, I would never send anybody there.
But I think it's cool. There's nothing else to think about. Do you retire? I mean, every single, another group. Yeah, the elderly who, do they need to head home or something? The other group, when do you retire? And also, can you stay in your country? Because a lot of countries have visa requirements of once you hit a certain age, we don't want you in this country anymore. But what if you've spent the last 25 or 30 years from, you know, age 20 to 55 working in this country? This is what you know how to do. And then at 55, 60, 65, they kick you out. Your entire work is over because of a visa requirement where they said, and adios. And maybe you can come back and visit sometimes, but that's the end of it. It's certainly, I feel like it's something that the average retiree doesn't have to worry about being, you know, okay, I'm going to retire from my job. I'm still going to likely keep my home and stuff in overseas work, though. If you retire from your job, you might be done in the country, which then begs the question, well, if I don't want to be kicked out of my home and kicked out of my community and kicked out of the work I've been doing, maybe I don't retire. Maybe I just stay on, even though it's getting harder and I'm getting older. But I know that this is, you know, once I'm done here, we're out of this country. So I got to keep pressing on. Or maybe I am doing great and I'm healthy. I got another 5 or 10 good years in me, but they have an age requirement. So even if I could keep going, it's over. They're kicking us out. It just, again, different aspects of life. And how much of that did you put away money in retirement for when you head back to your home country? Were you building that investment? Because people, again, you're probably living on other people's support. How much of that support are they putting towards your retirement? And how much of that support do you feel comfortable putting? And it's a question of funds and finances and stewardship there that you have to also wrestle with. How much am I allowed to build? You know, when I ask my average supporter, or I sit down or I present them at a church, do I mention the fact that, you know, 10% of this is going to an IRA or something like that? I don't know how much you put in IRA. I'm clearly not ready for that. But some, you know, these are things you've got to do. And would that stop somebody? Would somebody go, wait a second, I'm writing a check, but I'm writing it for I would hope that wouldn't stop anybody, but I guarantee you there are people who would ask the question like, wait, I thought this was going to help people. This is just going so you can have a nice retirement home. You know what I mean? All these things that they're all everyone's trying to wrestle with and figure out what's the right approach to do it.
Mm-hmm. I guess that actually kind of leads us into another thought that I had, and I'm careful on how to phrase this because I think it is an important thing to consider, but also I'm not wanting to bash on anybody. But what do you do if you're a missionary, you're serving overseas, and you are struggling in some way? Let's go back to like anxiety, depression, even like a long-term illness or something. A lot of people, I feel like there's a stigma around it a little bit, but then how do you let your supporters know? Do you let your supporters know? Because there is inevitably a little bit of like, oh, well, what should you do? Should I, like, if you're not able to do the work, should I, you know, go support somebody else who is? So if you are on the field and there is something you're struggling with, and like, do you tell people about it, or do you feel like you have to? And it could be entirely in your own head where you're thinking, oh, man, like, I can't tell them. And people would be 100% on board with you getting the help that you need or whatever. But there's just that automatic, especially when you're living on support, you are mindful that it is not, you know, your money and it's, you know, somebody else is giving it to you. So you want to make sure that you're stewarding it well. There's just an added pressure that comes with that.
Yeah, I don't know that many other jobs where your salary, quote unquote, is handed to you in individual chunks by different people that you know, right? And that they're keeping up with you. Again, they're not here in person with you, so they're keeping up with you through social media. Of course, you want to keep them updated on your progress. They're expecting that the money that they give is going to good work. And they're when they're writing that check, they both are saying, I imagine they're saying, I both believe in the work you're doing, but I also believe in you, right? Mm-hmm. I think you're the right person and God has called you to do this thing. I'm trying to support you and be faithful with it. So what do you do? How much of that can you share your struggles? And we don't want to say it like this because it shouldn't be. But how many of you would go and share all your struggles with your boss, right? Like, how many of you would be comfortable telling the person that hands you your salary check, here's all the different areas I'm struggling to do my job lately? And maybe you have a really good relationship with that boss, but what if you only see that boss once every 2 or 3 years? And what if that boss is watching you through, you know, your online interactions and they're just reading the evaluation reports and know they like you and they had a good relationship with you? You see what I'm saying, though? It can be very much a stressor. And even just, I feel like for Elise and I in our own personal lives, just sharing not even giant difficulties, but just basic struggles, we really wrestle with how much of the hard things are we supposed to, because we don't want to create the impression that everything's always hard and sad all the time. Mm-hmm. But we also don't want to create the impression that everything's rosy and sunshine all the time. How do we balance being truthful and honest without being complainative or whiny?
There are ups and downs like every part of life.
Yeah. And how much do we, you know, because I think some of the most stressed out times we've ever been in updating has been like, this thing went bad. How do we tell our people back home? And then every time we send those kind of messages, everyone is very encouraging and everyone has always been very supportive. And we always walked out of it like, well, why were we so worried? These are great, wonderful people. What were we thinking about? But there's just that fear of, well, what if they look at us and they say, well, it's because you're the failures. That's why it's going all wrong, or whatever it could be.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. There's always that, because you're kind of putting yourself out there. It's very vulnerable. And I think that just, that scares people, like, and understandably, especially when it's kind of tied to your livelihood.
Yeah. I may be tough for anybody. And then I do think it's worth saying, too, you mentioned depression. I mean, there's church history is full of people who struggled with depression, whether it's Charles Spurgeon is probably one of the most famous examples you can go to. But there are many other. I think you could even argue the Bible. Jeremiah didn't seem like the happiest fellow. But you can see definitely there's struggles of depression out there. I think overseas it can be really tough, too, because, A, not only are you cut off from your normal support system, again, your family, your friends, your community, what you know, a lot of times you're either by yourself or you're very lonely environments, or you might even be in a hostile team. We mentioned teams and organizations can be good.
Right.
But there is the flip side when your team and organization is not good. Maybe there's clashing of personalities. Maybe there's some, you know, a prideful person on the team. Maybe you're the prideful person on the team. But, you know, whatever it can be, there we've definitely seen situations where it's actually very negative and very strugglesome for everybody on board, and they're having a hard time. Or the team just let them down for whatever reason. Or your ministry didn't work out. Or you spent 2 years plugging along somewhere and no one's come to Christ. All these kind of situations, that can certainly hit people emotionally and spiritually very hard, too. And then they're on their own. They're out there struggling. How much help can they ask for? What kind of things do they really need? These are very difficult questions that they are struggling with. And the same way that I think you look at your scriptures, you see lots of people in scripture who are struggling through, you know, David while he's being chased by Saul. There are lots of people struggling through these really hard times. It's happening to people too. And this doesn't take away. I know it's also happening to people back home. I know you guys are also having lots of bad and hard things go on in your own personal life. So it's not in any way to say that this struggle is automatically worse than someone else's. It just can be difficult to, it can be difficult for people to even know that's happening to the people overseas. They might not even realize how much of that person that they've been supporting is having a really hard time. And you may have wanted to know and you didn't know because they feel scared to tell you.
Yeah, I agree. I think you said it well, very well. The other thing I have here on my piece of paper, this is handy dandy piece of paper, is what, so we've kind of talked about if you have, you're an elderly person, you've obviously, you're kind of retired out here or out there. But then there's the other families that they maybe want to continue ministering, but their children are all going away to college. And that kind of leaves their heart in two places. So they want to do ministry and they also, their children are in school. And that's very difficult for a lot of people. I think that'll be a struggle for us. We'll have to figure out how to navigate that when our kids go off to college.
That's a long ways away. I'm not really,
I know. Well, I'm just,
that.
I know, but I am preparing for it. So
good for you.
But anyway, there's, so you have the people who decide to, as they have more kids to get into college and less kids that are, you know, on the field, they kind of move with their kids back home and their ministry looks different. Sometimes they end up kind of retiring from ministry in the formal sense. Other times they continue to work remotely. Other times they take a position in administration for their org or they get some kind of promotion. So there are different ways that people figure out how to navigate that. But I do think that particular adjustment is because it really is the end of an era. Like as much as when you move from like the remote tribe lands into like, you know, a more populated area, you're still in the same country, supposedly. But this other thing, it's a whole adjustment from how you've done your entire life, how your kids were raised, where your kids were raised. And I think that's a huge part of your life that then, I mean, how do you, as you're trying to relate to people back home, like how do you kind of fit back in to normal society a little bit? Like, it's a little different, I feel like. I mean, we haven't gone through it, but I feel like I've seen people go through it and it does seem challenging.
Well, and I mean, for example, too, you don't, for a long time, it was just send the kid back to your home country and just, it'll be fine. Maybe a cousin or someone looks after them. But it was definitely found that a lot of children who did that really struggled to readjust. And a lot of families now want to go back over and help their children readjust back into the culture that their family is from. But that is also a difficulty too, because now you're entering their world for who knows how long until they adjust, and you have your other kids usually with you. So how many times can you do that? Where, you know, how many times can you leave the field to go adjust a child? How long does that take? I'm sure it's different for every kid. It's going to be a difficulty. It's going to be a lot. And then you also older, almost everyone too has parents that are beginning to get older and who need care too. I'm sure many people can relate. Yeah, you know, mom and dad are getting older, they're this and that, this and that. Well, how long can you take care of mom and dad when you live on the other side of the world? And how much can you be there for them? And all those kinds of questions that also have to be kind of figured out and answered, that become, especially as I feel like it seems like the crunch time seems to happen as these people's children are hitting 18, 19, and 20. It's almost at the same time that their parents are declining to a point that they can no longer do things by themselves, and then there becomes this big crunch. Do I step up in the family and take care of these people? Is someone else going to do it? It's a big thing that every family is asking these questions, regardless of whether you're overseas or not. But that overseas element does add a real thing. And if you are not overseas, I would imagine that most people are still able to keep their jobs, livelihood, and somewhat semblance of what their life. They probably aren't having to move house. Sometimes you are, but a lot of times you're not. But it's different when you are overseas. If you have to go back and take care of them, you're leaving everything, all this stuff. And how do you re-enter the workforce when, what is your job? Well, I can translate the Bible from this really difficult language that was never written down into a text that can be published. Or, you know, I know how to catch fish with these people on this, you know, this remote place. Or I've learned to do man-on-the-street evangelism in these mountains. And these are great skills to have. But it's not necessarily skills.
They don't translate to a secular environment.
Yeah, it's not necessarily skills that are going to pay the bills. Oh, that's that, like,
ooh,
that right
I like
there.
That.
Anyway, that's, but the thing is, like that, and that's the truth of the situation. Now, obviously, that shouldn't be your only primary motivator. The Lord is faithful and takes care of his people. But it is something these people are going to struggle with as they have to deal with, okay, do I go into ministry? Do I try to find a pastor somewhere? Do I go back to seminary? Do I become a professor? Are these options even available? And again, or am I jumping into the secular workforce and trying to somehow explain how my last 20 years in a desert or on an island or up in the mountains somewhere now can make me a very useful salesman for your company or whatnot? It's got to be extreme. And again, if you are going back to those things, a lot of times you're starting with no house, no cars, no appliances, maybe some hand-me-downs people hand you, but you're going to probably be starting from scratch where everyone you knew started that 30, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So you're really, quote unquote, behind in building that value and stuff up. And not that life is all about money, but it is something you're going to notice and feel as your children need money for college. And as your parents are starting to get older, you're going to just be in a very different place than the people around you who've had a lot of time, hopefully, to prepare for some of those big issues.
Yeah. Do we have anything else on that? Like, I'm trying to think if there's anything we missed. I'm sure there are things we missed. If we happen to miss something, make sure you, like, write us and let us know, hey, you missed this important thing. And we'll cover it on part three in 2 years when we do part three.
Yeah, part three. I think the only thing I would miss is we kind of covered a lot. I don't want this episode to just feel like a big list of negatives.
Right.
Because I do think there are a lot of positives, too. We overseas, you do get the blessing of, as we mentioned, money things or this and that. You do have these big issues you have to deal with. But again, everybody has to deal with some of these issues to a degree. Retirement, what you do with your parents, children getting older. Those are things everyone has somewhat to deal with. It can just be easier if you're, you know, your children go somewhere to school and then they can drive home for the weekend versus flying halfway around the world.
Yeah, I will say Troy had a great idea about this. A few weeks ago when I was pitching this episode idea to him, he was like, why don't we just start like an MK college?
Yeah,
that would solve
go.
All these problems.
Just have
so
it right
somebody needs
here
to underwrite
in the overseas
that.
Area, and then
the overseas area. Put one on every continent at least.
Yeah, get a couple. But the flip side of it is too. You know, you get to see a lot of blessed answers to prayer that are very direct. Where you're like, wow, that money, that thing, that ticket came just when the Lord had to send it in a way that I think everybody can experience this. But I don't want to undercount how many times that in our lives, or friends' lives, or families' lives. Man, that thing that was needed did show up right when it was. And the other thing I'd say is just maybe it's our community lately. But man, we sure saw a lot of tropical fevers go through.
Oh, yeah. Everybody had dengue this year.
Dengue or what was it? I mean, there's just been.
It's not the chupacabra, but that's what it sounds like.
Where it's like a chikungunya or whatever.
Yeah.
It's in our community. And there's just been a lot of things that like just tropical fevers that I don't remember worrying about as a kid. Growing up in North Florida, I never was like, oh, where's so-and-so? Oh, his whole family has dengue this week. And so, you know, praying they make it. And some of them might have to be air flighted to someone somewhere else. What? Like, that was not overly a big problem. It's not something that it's exactly what you would expect. Oh, and people are listening and going, wow, you live on a tropical island. You have tropical fevers. Like, real water is wet and headlines here, guys. I know. It's just something I noticed this year, especially.
Tropical fevers
couple.
Are the worst.
They really
they
do.
They are awful.
They really do have a way of being bad. So I hear, because I haven't had them yet. So 3 years ago, and I haven't had any of the bad ones. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to be bitten by a mosquito as I say this, just out of spite. We like to do this. We like to kind of share things. I hope that you learned some stuff, thought about some stuff, maybe had some, hopefully, you know, things revealed or ideas and stuff that hopefully will help you better able to communicate, talk to, engage with those people in your life who are overseas. I think I said this last time, but send them a message. Let them know you care. Tell them you're praying for them. Ask them how the family is doing. They want to hear from you. They usually love to update and share. And if they actually know that you care, that goes a really long way. You know, when they are in town, try to say, hey, can I get dinner? I want to hear how you are doing. What's going on with you? Don't worry about the support and just be real with me as a person, because they're usually hoping there are people like that overseas. When they can go back to their home country, it's a time for them to kind of relax the load a little bit. And it can be, on the one hand, it can be very stressful speaking at churches and going around and visiting people. But when they can meet people from their own culture, speaking their own language, there's no issues, and they can just chat and speak freely. It can also
speak as themselves, I feel.
Yeah, it can be such a freeing thing that they can't always get while they're on the field. And so if you can be that for somebody, that can be an extremely encouraging thing for them to have in their life. So we hope that this episode and the behind the slideshow from last time does that. It's on our mind partially because we are headed back to the States this summer. Last time, 2 years ago, I got to speak at a couple different churches, including churches that were listeners to the show who invited us on and said, hey, come. If you're in our area, come our way. And we worked it out. We're able to come a couple different ways. It was really awesome. And so we're kind of saying the same thing again. If you would like to hear from us or would like us to come through, hey, let us know. Talk to us. Tell us what church you're at. You never know. The Lord might be a lot closer to you than you think for the summer. And so
we can tell you where we're at. That's helpful. There are 50
states. Well, we know we're going to be in Tennessee and we know we're going to be in Kansas City and
Colorado.
Lord willing, we'll be in Colorado. Other places, it's not always as clear, but hey, we just want to let you know we're out here And if you'd like to hear from us or have us come by, or we're traveling through an area or something like that, let us know, because it's a great opportunity for us to connect. We only get to do this once every 2 years, but when we can meet listeners and we can talk to people, it is a true blessing to be able to share what we do.
Very true. Agreed.
All right. Well, this is Troy and Elise, and you've been listening to Revive Thoughts
and Martyrs and Missionaries.
There we go.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.